Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're an avid fan of rap music, chances are that you're familiar with the Houston group, the Ghetto Boys. One of the group's members was Richard Shaw, better known as Bushwick Bill. Bill was born with dwarfism. He used his fame and success to not only transcend the Ghetto Boys, but to upend a lot of cultural norms surrounding short people. Wisconsin native Charles L. Hughes is the author of a book called Why Bushwick Bill Matters. Charles eloquently explores the complicated life that Bill lived. Bill passed away in 2019 at the age of 52. Charles theorizes that for Bushwick Bill and other people with disabilities, entertainment isn't such a big step when your disability is always front and center.
People with dwarfism, but also other folks who have, you know, observable disabilities, right, or who are read as disabled because of physicality. You know, one thing that we all kind of deal with is this, what scholars call the hypervisibility, right, where we're kind of always on stage anyway. We're always performing because so many ideas and fears and narratives and other things get kind of written onto our bodies anyway. So one of the things that short folks and many disabled folks over the years have really wrestled with is how to kind of use that unique, exceptional physicality to our advantage. And for a lot of people, including Bushwick Bill, the uniqueness of our bodies can be something that we can quite literally capitalize on.
I still remember the days when people pointed and laughed at me and threw things at me because look at the funny guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So is that something that you can let go, or is it still a painful place for you?
It's still a painful place because that's what keeps me grounded. It's like, if I really think people love me because I'm short, I'm lying to myself. Because if I wasn't famous, I would be living the life I was living before the fame.
He doesn't try to act like it doesn't matter, which is something I think that a lot of sort of ableist ideas about disabled people will tell you that, oh, disability shouldn't matter, or we shouldn't even talk about it, we shouldn't even acknowledge that it exists. And of course, that's not, I don't think that's helpful at all. And I think that's actually the opposite of what needs to be done. And Bushwick Bill is this really wonderful role model in a certain way of how to do that. He's a very complicated figure, but in the way that he talks about shortness and disability, he really offers this kind of powerful and unexpected career-long demonstration of how being physically different is something that can and should be addressed, and that disabled folks and short folks in this specific case can really powerfully kind of shape our own narratives, which is what he was constantly doing. And that's another thing he learned from hip hop very early on, was that, you know, hip hop and particularly rap and rhyming traditions within hip hop culture, he understood that that was a way to distinguish oneself and to define oneself, to tell one's own story, and to do it in a way that others wouldn't or couldn't be able to. And I think that was another really powerful way that he, as this brilliant artist, used his form and used his physical form and his art form to really make a powerful statement.
How did the Ghetto Boys incorporate Bushwick Bill's physical difference into the songs?
The Ghetto Boys incorporated Bushwick Bill's size in really a variety of different ways. Originally, he was hired to be a part of the group as a dancer and as kind of a hype man. He wasn't someone who was necessarily a full-fledged member of the group, but early on, members of the group recognized that he had not only his skills as a dancer and not only this unique physicality, but that he could also rap.
Half my body is Chucky, the other half is Bushwick. A short nigga always puffing some lead. I haven't figured out a way to get my fist out your forehead. What up, get up, sit up, you get lit up. A knife in this.
Bushwick Bill is so wonderful at kind of, you know, refuting and completely destroying that long held and I think really, really problematic idea that short people are just cute.
Yo, when I'm mad, I'm ready to slay. The graveyards are packed, but it ain't nothing but child's play.
You know, childlike and adorable and the kind of the munchkin vibe that is often attributed to short folks. And he is, if anything, he is not just out to be adorable. You know, he's out to be funny, he's out to be sexy, he's out to be dangerous, he's out to be eloquent and political, and he does all of these things. And he did all of those things throughout his work, both with the Geto Boys and on his solo albums, which he was making right up until a couple of years ago, working on solo music, which is really, really powerful stuff.
A lot of what the Geto Boys and Bushwick Bill are best known for are songs that essentially told stories modeled on horror movies. My Mind is Playing Tricks on Me is probably the best example. How were these songs received at the time?
Yeah, the Geto Boys were deeply influenced by horror movies and by cinema more generally. You hear them talk a lot, especially Bushwick Bill, about the importance of the movies on their work and on his work. And they absolutely were drawing on horror traditions.
This year, Halloween fell on a weekend. Me and Geto Boys are trick-or-treating, robbing little kids for bags, till an old man got behind our ass. So we speeded up the pace, took a look back, and he was right before our face.
Horror movies and horror culture become a way for the Geto Boys not only to kind of put their music in conversation with some other recognizable cultural products, you know, things that people know outside of hip hop even, but also to make a really important point, I think, about, you know, what is the really terrible thing, right? What are the things that we really need to worry about? They also then use that language of horror and use that language of scary narratives to turn inward.
My hands were all bloody from punching on the concrete. Goddamn, homie. My mind is playing tricks on me.
Right, so that, okay, you may think that everything is just, you know, these over-the-top kind of narratives and fantasies, but we're also internally struggling. And I think that's one of the most powerful things the Geto Boys do, and Bushwick Bill is right at the core of that and bringing his shortness into that as an additional factor in ways that I just think are really, really powerful and really sophisticated and have not been given their due credit, I don't think. Not just in the way we talk about hip-hop, but really kind of the way we think about this. Think about American popular culture and think about the way that these things work more broadly.
I was surprised to learn that Bushwick Bill didn't write the lyrics for most of his most famous songs. How did he make those songs his own?
I think that it's important to remember when we think about that, that, you know, Bushwick Bill, number one, there's no way these songs would have been written without him. Everyone who either wrote for or with Bill talks about the fact that he provided this opportunity to write things that were totally different. And beyond that, I think also, even in situations where he was just rhyming others' lyrics that might not have been directed to be performed by him, when you have these lyrics coming out of Bushwick Bill, I think it matters to, on some level, no matter who is writing them, because he is disrupting our ideas about what short folks or disabled folks more generally, how we fit in to hip hop and to pop culture more generally. And the other thing I want to mention is just his literal voice. You know, one of the things that makes him so distinctive is that he has this kind of remarkable rhyming voice, and he's, you know, employing some Jamaican toasting and patois, which speaks to the fact that he was born in Jamaica.
Although I was born in Jamaica, now I'm in the U.S. making deals. Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. I mean, one that you don't really know. Riding around town in a drop-top Benz, hitting switches in my black 6-4.
So it's just impossible to imagine some of these songs or the Geto Boys more broadly without him, regardless of who is credited with the authorship of the lyrics.
Let's talk about the album cover of We Can't Be Stopped. Can you tell the story about how that album cover came to be and how Bill thought about it in later years?
So the cover of We Can't Be Stopped, in 1991, the Geto Boys release this album, which, as you can tell from the title, is kind of their answer to the crackdown, right? Their answer to the anti-Geto Boys and anti-rap chorus and controversy that had emerged. And the album itself is just filled with really kind of remarkable songs that are mixing the older kind of, you know, over-the-top fantasies with the political critiques, the funny songs, the songs about sex, right, all of these things. But the cover is what really distinguishes it beyond the fact that it, I think I would argue it's their best album, but the cover is what really makes it famous. In that Bushwick Bill, Richard Shaw, after the album had been recorded, in an incident that is kind of unclear exactly what occurred, but he ended up shooting himself in the eye after an argument or some sort of incident with his girlfriend. He seems to have been under the influence. He seems to be having some sort of mental health crisis during the time. Again, it's unclear what actually happened, but he almost died, but he ends up in the hospital with his eye basically damaged beyond repair. It had to be removed. And he's wearing an eye patch, and he's in the hospital when this happens. And the other members of the group decide that this is a perfect opportunity to take an album cover shot that will be as kind of as noteworthy and as kind of outrageous maybe as the contents of their album. So they go into the hospital and take a photo with Richard Shaw in his hospital bed with bandages over his eye. And the other members of the group are standing on either side of of this bed when they take the photo. And this becomes not only the most famous incident in Bushwick Bill's career and life, but also one of these just iconic and kind of infamous album cover images. And of course, it helps the group and it helps the album gain attention. But in later years, at least on one occasion, Richard Shaw, Bushwick Bill, talked about how he felt a little bit as though they were using his vulnerability, that they were, that he felt a little bit used by the fact that this kind of image of him in a real state of vulnerability and of duress was used not only as an album cover image, but also as the sort of way in which then the album became kind of promoted. He talked about the way that he had to go out and do interviews very shortly after he was released from the hospital, that his eye was still, the bandages were still on his face. He was still in pain. He was still recovering from the mental health issue that he had faced, or still trying to negotiate his way through. And it becomes a moment that I think is really important for the group and for him, both because of the way that this image becomes a symbol for this ambivalent position he had had within the group of, on the one hand, being a really important member, but also always having this sort of difference be at the center of why he was so well known. And it also, more importantly, I think, becomes a subject that he starts to talk about. Riding in the ambulance, everything is hectic. I can't get a grip, I just can't check this. Everybody's crying, could it be I'm dying? Bullet in my head, in the bed, I was lying. Where's Meek? I wanna tell her I love her with an IV in my arm. I took a picture for an album cover. I think he was trying to seize control of the story because people were writing about this album cover. And to this day, people talk about this album cover as this kind of, you know, either funny moment or this like, wow, this is so out there kind of moment. And they don't address the seriousness of what led to it or the way that Bushwick Bill, even just on record, was talking about it. Certainly some folks do. I'm not the first person to do it. But I just find that very powerful because it not only, I think, speaks to Richard Shaw's brilliance, but also speaks to a longer question facing disabled folks about kind of why we are brought in as part of a group and what that means and how our difference can be exploited. So I kind of wanted to wrestle with that a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. What life lessons have you learned from Bushwick Bill?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I've certainly learned a lot about what it means to be short in the world. Not necessarily things that I hadn't thought of before, but ways to kind of articulate the experiences that I've had, to understand the sort of feelings and impulses that I've had, the way in which he is so wonderfully unwilling to bow to the expectations of a taller world, the way that he's not willing, and sometimes in ways that are really, you know, maybe even a little problematic, right? But in other ways as well, he's just not willing to water himself down or to kind of not talk about his shortness and not force people to confront a short person that doesn't fit into the narratives that an ableist society puts forward, right? Bushwick Bill is not just this adorable childlike figure. Bushwick Bill is not this sort of odd kind of, you know, troll or weird, you know, character of that kind of danger. Bushwick Bill is not this inspirational figure demonstrating how if we just all, you know, try our best, we can get over everything. But he's also all of these things at various points and works them together in ways that I find really important.
Charles L. Hughes, thank you for joining us today. Congratulations on Why Bushwick Bill Matters.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. As a Wisconsinite, it is such an honor to be on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is really, really wonderful. Thank you.
Charles L. Hughes is the author of Why Bushwick Bill Matters. He's also the director of the Lynn and Henry Turley Memphis Center at Rhodes College. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Jenna Friedman, Adam Naiman, and Charles L. Hughes.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Special thanks to guest producer Rob Menser.
He struck me as kind of a wild card.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
We believe he's getting a taste for it, and there'll be more.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
He looks like a winner, like he played the game.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
He gets things out of sociopaths that polite methods just don't.